This is Japan Baseball Weekly. News, interviews, analysis, and your questions, all about NPB. And now your hosts, Johnny Gibson and Jin Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of October 28th. I'm John Gibson, and with me, let's get this straight, on a Saturday night here in North Carolina for me, and on a Sunday morning in Tokyo for my buddy Jim Allen, is Jim Allen. What's happening, man?
Yeah, I'm the one who's here, and I think when I was at the Japan Series practice day, some of the guys were going, "Oh, I thought you were leaving."
Well, they get some high heat then.
Hashtag high heat.
I'm kind of jesting because that wasn't it, but there was some confusification when we were at the DeNA Bay Stars. I don't remember what game it was. A Friday, so it would have been Game 3 before Game 3 at Tokyo Dome when we were talking to people.
Well, you know, people have been having trouble telling us apart for years, so no surprise.
Yeah, that is understandable. So how you doing, man?
I'm doing okay. It's just really hectic, but I'm doing okay. Anyway, we got a lot to talk about. On this week's show, we've got JBW of the Yokohama Bay Stars. We got Double K, Kyle Keller of the Yomiuri Giants, and we look at the postseason. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so before we start, I have an announcement. I said that I was at the airport last week and that we'd have an announcement coming up, and here it is. Of course, I didn't know that Jim Allen had already posted something on X while I was in the air flying, and I had no idea, but to the surprise of many, I have made a move back to the United States, so I'm here. Family's going to be here in North Carolina soon. I've landed in another industry. It's not the newspaper or podcasting industry, although we wish we would have been able to make a job out of JBW. Wouldn't that have been sweet, right? Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's a new path and a big change, and we'll see how it impacts us going forward, but definitely we'll stay on this path right now. Jim and I haven't even had time to discuss the future of the show, and I obviously won't be able to get the interviews at the ballparks and all that stuff, so
I know. It's like one-legged race now.
one
depending on me to do the legwork is not what you call a business plan.
Well, we might be able to make it one. We'll see. If we start,
I need a prosthetic.
Yeah. We need a whip is what I was going to say, but yeah, I guess a prosthetic.
I was waiting for that one.
Either one.
we call that one the in Japan, the Ainomuchi, the whip of love.
The whip of love, huh? Okay. All right.
So they usually say it that way.
I bet. So, JBW has mostly been a labor of love, and I love baseball, and I love talking about it. I love Jim. I love hearing his knowledge and his perspective and everything. So we'll see. Anyway, let's go on to the interview. So Jim, we'll start with Kyle Keller.
Yeah. Okay. So I spoke to Kyle Keller and a few other people a week ago Friday when John and I were at Tokyo Dome in our JBW finale, and it was really fun.
Our interview finale.
Yeah, exactly. Let's all get that one straight. No, this story ain't over. No, but that day I got to talk. John was focusing on Bay Stars guys, and I was focusing on Giants guys, and it was really fun. It was in fact the best reporting day I have had in, I don't want to say ever, but it was one of the best ones because I talked to four Giants guys I'd wanted to talk to, and one guy I'd wanted to talk to for about 8 years for the first time. So that was Louis Okoye.
Oh yes, yes.
So really fun. And the first up here is Kyle Keller. And Kyle Keller is in his first year after 2 years with the Hanshin Tigers. And he's really enjoying it, and I'm just going to let you listen to what he had to say.
Our guest today on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast is Yomiuri Giants reliever Kyle Keller. Thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thank you. It's nice to finally meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah. Well, tell me, how is the, you know, what's this year been like now that you're getting winding? I don't want to say winding down. You're winding up or winding down.
Yeah. But. It's been great. You know, it was exciting division run, a championship run there at the end. So just trying to, you know, make this playoff run kind of get it back into gear. So it's been great.
And now you came here and the mounds, you like the Tokyo Dome mound is one of the ones I think a lot of players like.
I do like it, yes.
Was it easier than the one in Koshien?
It's about the same. I think I like the, I don't know, just I couldn't even tell you what specifically it is, but just something I like about it here. It's probably my favorite one, but Koshien I also enjoyed, but I'd say this is probably number one, but I couldn't even put a finger on why.
Well, it's not exposed to the weather. It's probably the best one.
That's true, yeah.
So, okay. Well, tell me about, you know, this is your third year, or second?
Mm-hmm. Third.
Okay. I've Corona wiped me out. I lost track of so many players. And this, you know, we used to be all over the field, like MLB, and in the dugouts. And then after Corona, most of the team said, we don't need you guys. We're good without you. But they're not good without you. So tell me, how is your game adjusted to Japan, and maybe some of the changes you've made in either preparation or approach?
I think it's adjusted pretty well. It's a little different game here.
Yeah.
But I think I've adjusted pretty well. I think I came over here, I learned a new pitch, and I started throwing a splitter. So I think that's helped me a good bit. And you know, just I really enjoyed my 3 years here. It's been a great time, and I think I've adjusted well, and learning a new pitch has definitely given me another weapon for, you know, some of these hitters who are have a little different approach than you see back home. So it's been great.
Well, that is, I mean, you fit the profile of a lot of players who are coming in the last decade.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, used to be guys who were either former MLB guys, or they were guys who were in their mid-30s and, you know, end of the road, get a paycheck. Mm-hmm. But now the guys come and they say, I came to Japan to learn stuff.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And to be a better player.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And I got that vibe from your what I've seen you
pitch.
Yes,
absolutely, yeah. Now, I've learned a lot over here. It's been a great 3 years. I really have learned a lot.
So what, I should say, how is your evaluation of Japanese base, is there anything when you go back home and you hear somebody talking about Japanese baseball and you say, no, I want to tell you this is the way it is?
It definitely exceeded my expectations. I didn't know what to think coming over here. I had talked to, you know, a few people who had played over here, but never really too in depth, and I just kind of came over with an open mind, and it really is great baseball. I don't think people back home realize how good the baseball is here and how good some of the players are. I think the World Baseball Classic kind of showed some people how good the baseball is over here, but you know, I just try to tell people, if you get a chance, you know, come out here, see a baseball game. It really is a great atmosphere, great baseball, and it's a great experience.
What okay, the splitter was a big difference, obviously. Of course, everybody here is telling you, giving you advice on how to grip it. Was there anybody's particular splitter that you based yours on?
It was kind of put together by a lot of people. The first guy I ever talked to was Atsuki Yuasa from the Tigers, one of my good buddies, and I was over here for maybe 2 weeks before I saw everybody throwing splitters, and I'm like, man, that looks like a good pitch. You know, it kind of works well against kind of the style of hitters here.
Right.
So I kind of just started asking questions, and he was the first guy I talked to. But then it was kind of a group effort from there, a bunch of coaches, a bunch of players, a bunch of questions, you know, a lot of tinkering. So I'd say Atsuki was probably the first guy I modeled after, but then kind of from there it took a lot of people and a lot of different trial and error, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great pitch if you can locate your fastball, and then they see that. And even here, even guys who are only trying to make contact sometimes can't touch it.
And it's still a work in progress. I mean, I've been throwing it for over 2 years now, but it's still I still have problems with it. Still trying to make it better, and it's still a, you know, a kind of a new pitch for me. So still a work in progress.
I hear that a lot, and the biggest shock I ever got was when I talked to Cy Snead. I said, "How long you been throwing a splitter?" He said, "Since I was about six, my dad threw it for baseball."
And he's probably still working on it too.
Indeed. That's life, man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, what's your plans going forward?
I'm really not sure. I'm kind of just trying to focus on this playoff run here.
Right, obviously.
But I love it here. I would like to stay here. I don't really know what's going to happen going forward. But, just kind of try to finish this season out strong and worry about that when we get there. So.
Fair enough. Okay, take care. Good luck.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay, so thanks a lot, Kyle. It was a pleasure to meet you. I apologize for taking so long, but as I said, I'm not the big park guy I used to be.
He's hopping around on one leg, for goodness sakes.
Exactly.
Well,
so what anything you'd like to comment about?
Yeah, this was before game three of the series, and that would be game four in your scorecards, but game three on the field. And so they had lost two straight coming into this game, and I guess there was some tension around the Yomiuri side. I didn't really sense it until I heard this talk. I'm sorry?
Oh, okay. I didn't feel it. I didn't feel it too much. Of course, I was talking to people about other things.
Sure. And everybody tries to stay loose, and it's all a facade, in my opinion. They're all, you know, cringing inside, and they're all nervous and thinking about their at-bats, a lot of the players and the other guys getting ready are wondering if they're going to be in the game, and the pitchers are wondering how they're going to attack guys. But anyway, I didn't get a sense that everybody was nervous or anything until I heard this interview. And granted, you know, Kyle, when he talked to me earlier, he probably had a little bit more energy earlier in the season, because this is his second appearance on the show this season. But, and obviously, again, his pregame might be different in the postseason from what it is in the regular season. And we don't know if he was scheduled to pitch, if the manager had a pitching plan in store for him that they might have discussed with him, or he was getting ready, he was getting into his mound mode or whatever. I don't know, but that all could be part of it. But he was much more energetic before in the interview, and he just seemed so much more subdued in this interview. And he pitched well in the series. That's really what counts in the end. But I just got the sense that the Giants didn't have much energy. And that's what it was. You know, it was nothing he said in this interview that was earth shattering or anything. I think obviously he has his focus on his future as well. So he was maybe wondering about that aloud when you asked him about it. And that probably is, you know, that factors into, you know, what's going to be, you know, I don't know what my future is. It's just as murky as you see it, dude. So why are you asking me, you know, kind of a thing. But the adding the splitter is good, and I wasn't surprised to hear things like that, because guys have to make the adjustments and all those kinds of things, and I'm glad he did it. And again, he pitched really well at Tokyo Dome during the season, so it would behoove the Giants, in my opinion, to stick with him, because he came up in certain situations and was really a factor for them. Yeah, and he contributes to the team, and I think, you know, he deserves another shot to do that, because he did help out. But in terms of the interview itself, I was just kind of shocked at the idea overall that the Giants didn't really have a lot of juice. They didn't have that fighting spirit that you need to, especially come back. But they did come back later in that series, so they lost that night. But they came back in the series and pushed it to a finale. But what did you hear, or what did you take away in that chat?
Well, I from that chat, what I took, of course, you know, me, I'm the history guy, and the analytic. I'm the history guy and the analytics guy. So,
yes.
I took away. I like the origin story. The origin of the splitter was to me the big thing, because it, you know, I really want to know who got what, where it came from, what was the deal. And it was really interesting to hear that he got it from Atsuki Iwasa.
Iwasa.
Well, he didn't see him this year. That's why he disappeared since the WBC. So, So there was more to come from that talk, as that mode as we go forward in the coming weeks. But that was interesting, and it reminded me about how much just the fact that playing in different environments adds to what you've got. You know, you adjust and you adapt to your new environment, and you add to your toolkit.
Right.
And of course, my favorite Splitter origin story is a famous one. It's about Masahiro Tanaka's picking up his splitter from something he read in Baseball Magazine about Brian Falkenberg's splitter.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. And then they ended up being teammates with the Rakuten Eagles.
Don't remember Falkenberg being on the Eagles, but okay, yeah.
well, let me just make sure that's the case, but I'm pretty sure it was.
I remember him disappearing from SoftBank Hawks land, and then that was probably about it. But I just might not have remembered him being on there, but that's just
he
me.
He did, yeah, 2000. Okay, here's the thing. He went to the Rakuten Eagles the year they were not teammates. He went to the Eagles the year Tanaka left.
Okay.
For the Yankees. So they were not, but that's where he got that one. So that was interesting. And so I love these stories. And I didn't get the vibe as far as the energy vibe from him, but I did get it from Hayato Sakamoto, who told me I've been wanting to talk to him for a while. But his thing was, he said, I've never played as badly as this when I wasn't hurt. I wasn't hurt at all this year, and I played badly, and I'm really, I don't know what to do. And then, of course, we'll get to that later, but obviously he did know what to do moving forward, because he found some of that old juice as this series progressed.
Yeah, he did. He did. All right. Well, you did also talk to, I keep calling him JBW, but we should say it's JB Wendelken. And that was before the Japan Series game. Which one? The opener?
It was on Friday. It was the practice day. I take that back. It was yesterday. It was Saturday afternoon in Japan when he was finishing practice before game one.
Okay.
So JB, I had just waved at that day at Tokyo Dome, but we hadn't spoken all year. I do remember him as being a big gregarious, well, big and very gregarious guy. And it was just a joy to chat with him. And we talked about, you know, how do you deal with teams that you haven't seen before? So let's have a listen.
But yeah, man, I kind of like where it is, like the way we come in. I don't know much about them. They don't know much about me. It kind of evens the playing field, where it's like I get to actually read and not really worry about analytics or anything like that. I get to do my own thing.
Okay. Well, then the next question is, how much do the coaches and the meetings help you in your preparation?
Me personally, it's good to know, but I prefer watching video.
Right.
Because I can see guys' swings versus like them just telling me what's going on. Right. And at the same time, my stuff's different from every other guys here in this league. So it's like my stuff's going to play the way it's going to play. So if I can just see guys' holes or their power spots or their weaknesses, I can pitch around that. So
see how they respond to pitches and video.
I respect what they have to say and all that. But I think for the most part, I think just a mental image of seeing their swing kind of gives me everything I really need to know to go off of.
Yeah, let me ask, because I'm not a pitcher. I mean, I'm better at watching pitchers than I am hitters, because I can see where the ball's going.
Yeah.
With a hitter, everything happens before they hit the ball.
Yeah.
And so I can see, oh, this is how the ball's moving.
Yeah.
Okay, but now as a pitcher, you're looking at the swing.
Yeah.
And you're looking at, see how he reacts to your pitches.
So for the most part, I'm going to just, when I attack these guys, it's just, when I attack them with the first pitch, see where they're swinging, see what they're wanting. If they're chasing, then I'm just going to keep playing with them. If they're going to go after and attack it, I'm going to have to change my approach. So it's really just watching that first swing kind of tells you everything you want to know.
Okay.
If they foul off a good pitch and then they swing at a bad one, it's like, okay, you kind of know where to go.
Okay, well, and the next question, do you get sort of like a baseline, this is this guy's norm?
I mean, from
watching the video?
Yeah, from like their numbers and all that, we got a baseline. I mean, the team's good. They won 91 games for a reason.
Yeah.
So, like, my thing is it's more along the lines of just – me versus him out there.
Okay.
And see what they got.
Okay.
Heads up, and if they get me, then I got to tip my hat.
Okay. So you have watched the video. I got to ask which the hitters impressed you the most that you looked at.
Oh, they're four hole guy. He's a big free swinger, and he takes an outside pitch and pulls it, which is kind of impressive.
Yeah.
So like, you can look at it how you will, but. If he gets me, I got to tip my hat, but I got to attack him.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, it's good to see you back. Good to see you in the big games here.
Oh, yeah. Conley, we're here.
Yeah. Take care.
All right. See you.
Okay. Thanks so much. I was really trying to get to the point of, you know, how much he bases his adjustments on video and if he had a baseline for each player he really dove, you know, drilled down deep on that. So I'm so thankful for that. And I wasn't surprised because he's such a open and a very well-spoken guy. So it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, I have to tell you, I love him talking about the analytics aspect of preparation and that he respects what those guys bring. But give me some video and get out of my way. But I was shocked. In fact, my mouth was a jar. It was a jug. It was a keg after hearing you agree with his non-metric-based approach. And you just got through saying a second ago that you're the analytics guy. And here you are just slathering butter all over his toast here when he's talking about not listening to the analytics and not necessarily basing his approach on metrics.
Well,
who are you, Jim Allen? Which one?
Because I understand analytics doesn't mean I think the world has to live and die by them. And I'll tell you, you know, it's when I'm doing my pitching ranking, my pitch rankings now in NPB and my pitch valuations. And basically they're evaluations of how games are affected, impacted with each pitch.
Mm-hmm.
So if your slider is getting more positive results, that weighs, and we have metrics for that. But it's not the whole story. It's not the whole story. It doesn't tell you which pitch is better. But it tells you.
I don't know, man.
Hold on. Well, listen.
Okay,
listen,
I'm going to listen. I'm listening. My mouth is closed.
Stop interrupting. Who do you think you are?
Me? Yeah, I come to the U.S. and I turn into Jim Allen. Go ahead.
Well, your wife be surprised. Lavender hair, darling. Oh, hold on a second. That's not a good one.
He starts with the hair.
You had none, and now you got a bunch of white stuff hanging off the head in your head. Okay, so. No, what I mean is the thing about analytics is it allows you to look at things that you can't see. You know, you can see trends and you can see big picture things that you can't see in a snapshot, but you're missing the snapshot. You're missing the visual image. And so, for example, when I do the pitch rankings, I can see which pitch was effective in terms of game results,
mm-hmm.
in a very narrow field. It doesn't tell you how pitches interact with each other, which is another thing, but it does tell you in general which pitch was more valuable in an overall sense, in one sense. And it can lead you, it can open your eyes to things that you didn't notice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you can see a pitch. So you can see a pitch. And, you know, when I first started doing this in 2022, I went, Shota Imanaga's fastball, huh? And then I started really paying attention to it. And I'm going, oh, that's why. So what the analytics do is they allow you to look for things that you didn't expect to see. And ask yourself, why are these guys' numbers good? Now, sometimes you can say, okay, it was probably random chance. But in other cases, you can see quality where you didn't expect to see it. So I like that part of it. So it's another side of the picture. But on the other hand, if you're a pitcher, there's too much information, really. I mean, the problem is not analytics sometimes. The problem is that Japanese teams don't really do analytics as much as they try to predict the future. There's trying to do weather forecasts. It's like, am I going to go outside without an umbrella because the weather forecast says it's not going to rain and it's pouring? You know?
All right.
So that's my point. Anyway, so no, that's how I see analytics. I mean, they're a really useful tool, but they're not everything.
All right. Well, I'm listening to this and I'm thinking, stop stealing my stuff, Jim Allen. That's not you. You're all metrics and rainbows, and I'm process and approach guy. So I'm thinking, stop it.
I apologize for being more well-rounded than people.
Than I expected.
Yeah. I apologize for not being pigeonholed.
Well, that was it. And then I love JBW talking about that aspect, you know, and I want to see the guy swing. I want to see where the holes are. I want to figure out how to attack this guy. And if he's going to be aggressive and he's swinging at things near the plate, that means I don't have to throw it over the plate. If he's not, then I will make the proper adjustment and I'll go after him in a way that suits my abilities and suits my style of pitching so that I can make my pitches. So I loved it. I think that,
you know, you can sometimes take things from an analytic, you know, the data conclusions, and then look at the video and say, okay, I see that. But this is what I'm really interested in. But, you know, that's, you know, he's the one who's got to go out and throw the ball.
Sure.
So it doesn't matter what I think.
Well, yes, we know that. Newsflash. You don't have to explain that one to us. You don't have to break that down.
All right. It doesn't matter what I think or you think. It
Correct.
Matters what they think. So I was interested in that because, you know, the contrast with Japan is with the league play is that they've seen these guys over and over and over again.
Yes.
So I was curious. So I was thinking about when he was watching the video, does he use the video to get sort of, this is this guy's normal approach to this pitch and this approach, you know, and he looks to see things. But it's really about, I mean, when you're pitching, it's really about reading swings.
Okay.
And the video helps that. I mean, it helps you the first time out because you at least you have an expectation to work from.
Right. Well, never really heard you talking about that stuff before. So I'm glad you are well-rounded. All right. So let's talk about
stomach is well-rounded. It always has been.
That's sometimes a good thing. All right. some of the ladies like that. So
I've heard that.
Yeah. Let's talk about how we landed here. So we did say earlier that the Giants pushed that CLCS final stage or second round to a finale, a decisive game, and they won. They did that by winning two straight, but they couldn't get that third one. So it's it's the last game I really want to focus on. But the Giants won 4-1 in game four. That was game five on your scorecards, and then they took the next game 1-0 behind Iori Yamasaki. And I thought I didn't get to see much of either of these games, having to wake up early and then start work before the games are over, essentially. But I did get to watch and finish up game six, the finale. So which one did you want to talk about first before we get to the finale?
Well, I think game four was the interesting one for me. I mean, game five was a great game, but it was a pitcher's duel. But game four was the one that stuck out because if you looked at these teams before the series started, you could see, okay, one of these teams is really good at pitching and defense, and one of the teams is not.
His DNA, yes. So
yeah, his DNA, who committed, like, they were neck and neck, and this is, I know errors are not defense, but they were neck and neck with the Tigers all year, and who's going to make the most errors in Japan, and then the Bay Stars pulled away in the last week.
Crashed head first, one or the other.
Yeah. So that was a problem. That was essentially their problem coming in. And through the first five games of the series, they were playing like a normal team.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, the Giants defensively aren't a normal team. They're one of the better, they're one of the better defensive teams. They're probably the second best defensive team in Japan right now. And that showed. And they were the second best defensive team, even without their, I think, their Gold Glove shortstop now, second baseman Naoki Yoshikawa,
yes,
who was hurt. So, but the shortstop Makoto Kadowaki, who took Sakamoto's job at short, showed why he did that and why he's going to win a Gold Glove this year.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was just stellar performance by the Giants defense to get them back in this series, although Yamasaki was terrific.
Yes. Yeah, he was. He was. I didn't see much of this game. When I was listening, it just sounded like the kind of game that Yamasaki had thrown when he faced the Dragons, which, you know, he kind of owned them this season and the season before. And he just didn't have a lot of hard hit balls. People just didn't really square him up and he got through. But the Bay Stars did have seven hits in this game, and Yamasaki gave up six of them. But again, he scattered them. He did a good job of scattering them. He didn't walk anybody. So it didn't seem like, I guess, there was that much traffic. Like, I missed early on anyway, so I don't know exactly when a lot of those hits came on. But he was sharp for 6 1/3 innings, and he came with the win, and the bullpen was really good to close it out. And I just kept expecting the Bay Stars to get a run and at least even the thing up, and they just couldn't do it. And the Giants win a game with seven hits, and I'm sorry, with three hits, just three hits, right. But one of them was a home run. Daito Nakayama hits a home run, and that's it. And he hit that in the fifth inning. So really good game, though.
Yeah, Daito Nakayama was Raito Nakayama.
Didn't I say Daito?
Yeah, you said Raito because that's how it would normally be pronounced.
Daito.
Yeah, yes. Raito Nakayama, it was a surprise. You know, he was batting really high in the order early on, and a Giants fan colleague of mine was going, can we have Abe's brain removed? It might work better. But he had quite a series filling in for the aforementioned Yoshikawa.
Mm-hmm.
And he had some big moments. Not always big moments, not early enough big moments to keep them from falling down 3-1 in the series. But that was interesting. And then we get to the final game, which was a pip.
Mm. So, yeah, it ends up being a 3-2 win for the Bay Stars. And you know, Yomiuri took the lead in the first inning on an error. So I thought, I don't want to see a game decided on an error. No matter what team it is, you know, nobody deserves to go home in a big game, having committed an error and then try to sleep for the next, I don't know, 2-3 months after that, because your team is out of
but
the playoffs.
With the Bay Stars, you figured, you know, this is going to be the difference.
Nah, I just didn't want to see it. I didn't think it would be the decider, and it turns out.
Well, it was a Keito Mori, an error by a shortstop Keito Mori, and here's the thing. Okay, so that took that, and the Giants compounded their advantage thanks to Hayato Sakamoto, just a brilliant base running inning in the fourth inning. With a double, hustling double, sliding head first in the second, and then there's a wild pitch, and I think there was a wild pitch, and he slid head first, or there wasn't a, was there was a wild throw or something, I don't remember, but he slid head first into third, and then he was bunted home on a beautiful squeeze by
Shosei Togo, the pitcher,
Togo, the pitcher, right, and Sakamoto had more. It didn't help, but anyway, so I guess the story of this game then turned to Keito Mori, and who was sort of the Ebenezer Scrooge of the game, who was haunted by the ghost of Bay Stars fielding past.
Yeah.
And he came out, and he was a reformed man at the plate, and he basically sparked the two-run, the two-run tying fifth inning with an RBI triple, and then scored the tying run on a Mike Ford pinch hit single. This was in the fifth inning.
Right after, after Sakamoto did all that running and Togo got the 2-run lead. And it just seemed like that at that moment, this is the kind of game that the Giants really win. And quite frankly, the Bay Stars just either give up, give away, or just can't seem to make enough plays to win.
And then Hiromu Ise comes in relief for the Bay Stars. Is a guy I really like, and I've always liked. Tremendous fastball. Well, it's a fastball I like more than him. but he survives. He survives. The seventh wasn't really a big deal, but he survives the eighth after Sakamoto again leads off with another single, shows us some more head sliding around the bases, and he pitches out of that trouble. And then the ninth inning, Keito Mori singles to open the inning and ends up scoring on a Shigomaki single.
Well, yeah, back up, slow down.
Okay, go ahead.
Because I thought the key to the game was right here in these innings late, that Issei went out there and he put up that shutdown inning, but then they sent Daisuke Miura sent him back out there for a second inning, and he ran into some trouble, but he got out of it.
Sure.
And
sure.
And conversely, the Giants went to a starter. They went to Tomoyuki Sugano and put him out there. So they put him out there. He put him out there in the eighth inning to throw the first inning, and he shut it down. But he came out for another inning, and that's the way that the Bay Stars rallied. So again, if you would have told me at the beginning of this game that Sugano was going to pitch and that the Bay Stars were going to be down two runs in the middle of the game, and they didn't have any runs at all at that point, and they were going to come back and win the game, I just would have said there's no way unless they scored a bunch of runs, because they're not going to win a one-run game in a do-or-die game at Tokyo Dome against the Giants into the playoffs. I would not have seen that coming.
Right.
And so,
okay. And then the thing is, the Giants needed a tie. They didn't even have to win.
Right. And then you've got Shugo Maki hitting a two-out RBI single in the ninth. And then Kohei Morihara slamming the door in the ninth for the biggest save of his career. And then Morihara slamming the door, just an amazing game. And I bet that game, whoever the Bay Stars fans out there who didn't have heart problems or who had heart pills, either were developing heart problems or grabbing those pills or had to go to the hospital the next day because of that game. It was really a stress-heavy game, I think, on both sides, even for the losing team. So, and I'm going through it right now with my Dodgers, whom, you know, I sniped at a few episodes ago saying they wouldn't get near a World Series because of their lack of starting pitching. Oh, well, but anyway, great game to reach the Japan Series. Yeah.
And it was, and I unfortunately was not able to talk to Tomoyuki Sugano the day I was at Tokyo Dome because he's counting down. He's going to try to get an MLB contract, and I think he will get one because somebody's going to give him a chance to show what he can do. And if he's healthy, which is always a huge question mark moving to MLB, but he had a comeback season, which is almost a reason not to sign him.
Are you a Vegas odds guy? See, here you go, going back to metrics. Way he pitched this season? The way he pitched this season, if he carries that over, he'll be fine.
Yeah, he carries that over, but you don't really expect 34-year-olds to carry over what they've been doing in their first good season in 3 years. But who knows?
I would expect him to start out that way. Now, I wouldn't expect him to pitch a full season that way, but he didn't have problems this season, and he pitched great almost every outing. He was very consistent. So I don't see any reason. You're doing the numbers thing again. There you go.
I'm doing a regression to the mean. You really don't expect it. And sometimes you'll be surprised. Sometimes you'll be surprised, but it's sort of like betting on the house in a casino.
Yeah, you're doing a regression to the Allen.
Well, there's always that.
Okay. All right.
That's a good thing.
So, yeah. So let's move on to the Japan series, which started yesterday for you guys in Japan. And I thought, I woke up. I didn't catch the game, start listening from the beginning, because I actually am getting over my jet lag, which is good. But I had an exciting Dodger game that the night before that really knocked me out emotionally. So I was pretty much wasted and couldn't get up, but I did get up and catch the last four innings. And the Hawks win game one, 5-3 was the final, but they were up early in this game and then had to hold off the Bay Stars in the ninth. I don't know how that bodes for their late inning situation. We'll have to see if that evolves, let's call it evolution during the series, but game one, Roberto Osuna.
Yeah, he found it wasn't as easy to push around the base stars as one's domestic partner.
Right. So he gives up three runs in the ninth, but they get the win because they scored three runs in the top of the ninth themselves, and that was the difference. But it's going to be a challenge, I think, for the Bay Stars. They got past the Giants without Kotsky Azuma, their ace, and I thought as soon as they won that game, it's really going to be a challenge to get past the Hawks without their ace. But they started Andre Jackson. He pitched well enough. He did a good enough job, yep. But they didn't score enough runs. And then they gave up a hit to Kohei Arihara, pitcher. And it happens. I mean, we see it all the time in interleague, sure, that these Pacific League pitchers who never swing the bat get up there, and all of a sudden, you know, we've got guys knocking the ball all over the yard, not out of it, but in it, but enough to do damage. Because I think a lot of times these Central League managers, they are working their math to pitch to these guys so that they can get them out.
That almost really backfired on them, because when Arihara reached, the runner they put on first intentionally was at second base with two outs, and Yuki Inagita came up.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the intentional walk. Of course, it worked out. It worked out fine, because Andre Jackson then struck out, tied a Japan Series record by striking out five batters in a row to get out of the inning and get an out into the fourth inning. So, it was a very good game. And again, this was really what we saw, the SoftBank Hawks, you know, looking at them as a team over the season, they were the best, clearly the best offensive team in Japan, but the Bay Stars were behind, you know, they were in second best. They were mm-hmm. close. And without Kensuke Kondo, you know, he can't play. He started practicing in the outfield on Saturday. We may see him Sunday, but without him in the lineup, he's their best run producer. He sprained an ankle at the end of September, and he batted in the climax series, but he hasn't played defense since. And if without him in the lineup, these two teams are about even offensively. They are, however, not even defensively. The Hawks are probably a better defensive team than the Giants. And okay. that showed up in this game. Second RBI for Kohei Arihara was originally ruled an unearned run on an error by the Bay Stars right fielder, because he booted it around.
Mm-hmm.
But they went and switched that, and I had to fix my story because they had changed the ruling between the time I wrote it and the time I sent it. So, we saw that. And then the Bay Stars, I was interested in the ninth inning matchup. When the Bay Stars came out with a pitcher, Hayato Horioka, who pitched in six games all year.
Mm-hmm.
And he's basically a guy who, he's a former Giant nobody has really seen. And he was really good in his six innings this year. And he was good in the climax series. But he got whacked. He got whacked around in the ninth inning, and that was a problem. But then the Hawks come out with Roberto Osuna, and he was a problem.
Well, those three runs really ended up costing the Bay Stars.
And the fun thing was, of course, I guess the ninth inning, the fun part of the ninth inning was a Kenta Imamiya two-run double.
Mm-hmm.
And then in which Ukyo Shuto was on first base, and he recreated his mad WBC dash to home from first. And I'm not certain, but they might have had to pull his foot out of one of his teammates' rear end.
Ow.
Because they collided at home plate when they both scored almost simultaneously.
Yikes.
It was, but it anybody who watched, everybody in the press box was going, wow, it's just like WBC. Although there was one out instead of two.
Yeah.
So, and then Imamia eventually scored, and that scored on another single, and that was the three runs that they needed. And then the Roberto Osuna played giveaway.
Yes, he did. Yeah. So, yeah, a really, a low scoring, close game turned into a medium scoring, close game. But yeah, 2-run win. And then tonight in Japan, you've got Levon Moinello going up against, for the Hawks, going up against Shinichi Onuki of the Bay Stars. And that's a good matchup, I guess. But again, the Bay Stars without Azuma, they're just kind of different. So it's tough out here on the East Coast. Yeah.
Yeah. And if Onuki pitches as well as he did against the Giants, yeah, then they got a chance. He was inconsistent most of the year. We've seen how good he can be in stretches, but we'll see. Levon Moinello was more consistent. He wasn't perfect. Nobody's perfect. But anyway, so I look forward to that, and it's going to be fun. I'll be heading out to the park in about an hour.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Again, I'll try to do my best to get up and watch that game from the gym. All right. Let's make a four-seam transition and talk about the draft. Now, I completely missed the draft. I was looking for news. I didn't see much. But luckily, Jim is there. And did you watch the whole thing?
No, I basically
broadcast.
Well, basically, no. I basically focus on the first round and see who's the, you know, the way I rank them is if more teams name you as their top choice in the first round, that makes you the first overall pick. Although technically they're all first rounders.
Sure.
So the top overall pick in the draft, by my reckoning, was Rui Muneyama, a good hitting, good field, really excellent fielding shortstop for Meiji University, and he was won by the Rakuten Eagles, which is, after talking to people who work for the Eagles this year, he must be excited to play bro ball because he didn't shudder at the thought of playing for Rakuten.
You sound like you said bro really, ball, but you meant you said pro ball. It sounded like you said bro ball. I'm like, bro.
Well, no, I don't think bro ball is what they do in Rakuten. It's more like let's abuse them and see if they can get tougher.
Right. we got a piece of meat.
Yeah, I know. Every story that comes out of Rakuten is about who's been abusing their position within the organization. So, okay. So there's that. And five teams went for him, which meant four teams had to go and dig into the well for another try for their alternate picks.
Yeah.
And then number two. Well, among the other candidates.
I know.
And the Cebu Lions were twice lost lottery picks. So they had to go for their third choice after the best 11 players were gone. They ended up picking last in the draft.
Mm.
So not a good start for them. Anyway, the second overall pick was a hard throwing college lefty from Kansai University, Yumeito Kanemura, and the Chunichi Dragons got a present, and I was so happy because we got a lot of emotion from new Dragons manager
Kazuki.
Kazuki Inoue, who I haven't talked to, who I used to talk to a ton when he was their pinch hitting specialists 10, 15 years ago. And I haven't seen him in years. And just seeing his face light up was a really happy moment for me.
Yeah,
he's a pitch. Yeah, well, whatever. I mean, it's not going to hurt him. It's not like they can. I know their pitching is good right now. Overall, it can't hurt to get a good player. Of course, they would have been better off with a hitter.
Well, I can't even say that. They would have been better off getting a prospect who could hit, but I doubt that the player would help them next year. But I'm just thinking, I'm hoping they put this guy in the bullpen because that was one of their weaknesses, is a good hard throwing left-handed guy out of the pen.
Well, there's no reason
he's going to be a starter. I don't know if he's going to be a starter or a reliever for them, but we'll see.
Well, that's, you know, there's nothing wrong with taking a rookie and putting him in the bullpen. I mean, I think that's a good place for him.
Well, Iwase, when he came up, they didn't know what to do with him. He ended up in the closer role, but they were
sure he was a starter with a crooked spine, and thinking, well, that, I think actually that was part of the deal, was his spine is a little crooked, and they thought he might need more time to bounce back, so they made him a starter. And eventually they figured, well, we got to make this guy a reliever.
Yeah.
So,
and maybe in history.
And, yeah, interesting. Yeah. I mean, we could talk about Hitoki Iwase until next year's season opening podcast, but we'll cut it out. Anyway, the third overall pick in the draft went to the Yakult Swallows because nobody else went for their guy, who was another pitcher, Yuto Nakamura, and he was from the Aichi Institute of Technology.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see how that, see if his technological background will help him throw into that Swallows pitching philosophy, which is get strikes and don't worry about what happens afterwards.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, I unfortunately didn't get to see any of the draft and didn't get to read much about it, so I'll have to do some homework here moving forward. But yeah, it's different being on this side and not being able to flip the TV on and or go to the park. I still have my pass here. Still got my pass, but it's not doing me any good. Not doing anybody any good.
Yeah, you'd think I don't want to say this, it's MLB, but I want to report a couple of other things that I found out very vaguely. There's been because at the Japan series, there's also league and NPB officials around. Mm-hmm. And there's also lots of people who know stuff who maybe haven't been reporting it on air.
Mm.
And so I can report that the ball issue was because first of all, I'm going to tell you this. NPB wants everybody to know that the ball was never changed and nothing's wrong with it.
Just a little softer. Nothing to see here.
Well, it was not softer because they demanded, they said it's almost an exact replay of 2018 MLB when the ball's coefficient of restitution was exactly where it was supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
But the balls were not flying, and they were not flying because they were soft. They were flying. They were flying because they weren't falling apart at all when they collided with the bat, and they were remaining aerodynamically sound and more spherical.
Mm.
So they were flying farther. The flight properties were not changing as much as normal. And the problem this year in Japan, when I told people this, they're going like, "Who's telling you top secret information?" I says, some people talk, you know. They're going like, "How do you know this?" Yeah. And I said the problem was the yarn that they're stitching the seams with. It wasn't very good. And apparently what happened, I learned, was they moved the factory. Mizuno moved its manufacturing plant from China to Taiwan last year when they started manufacturing the baseballs for this year.
Hmm.
So they were made in Taiwan, and they were using, I'm guessing they were using a new maker for the yarn, and it was substandard. And then they did make modifications to that we saw later in the season. And then when I mentioned that the balls were almost as lively as last year's, the same person said, "How do you know this stuff?" I said, "You know, dude, all you gotta do is look at the numbers." And he's going like, "Damn." so anyway, but NPB wants you to know there is no intent to make the ball deader, even though every year for the past 3 years they have been deader. Although one reason was because they changed the wrapping, the way the balls were stored, and they're more moist. But that doesn't explain why the two seasons since then have been continuously less lively.
Right, Right.
Progressively less lively. So, okay. So anyway, that's the news.
All right. So, yeah. So nothing to see here, essentially. We've done everything the same.
Yeah. The first thing was the ball is just as lively as it ever was. We test them. Okay.
Right.
No, I mean, he's a friend, and it's a friend of mine, and he didn't take that kind of weird stance, but that's the answer. You know, that's the answer to everything. We didn't do anything. You know, it's like they had their, we didn't eat that cake. We scooped it up with our finger. We didn't stick a fork in it. We scooped it up with our finger. It's different.
Whatever.
Whatever. Okay. Sorry. That was all childhood right. Stuff. That was sorry for the baggage there.
Well, just wipe that icing off your face.
I guess the other thing, last thing I would say about the draft is that SoftBank took 13 players in the developmental draft.
Yeah, that team usually takes a lot of players. And somebody was asking me the other day, they said, why is SoftBank so good? I guess it's money. And I said, it's not just money, because they use that money. Well, they use that money to develop a third level of their team for player development. So you can say, you can easily throw on the surface and say it's because they have a lot of money, but you look at the way that they've set up and developed players, and then those players come up to the top team and produce, then you see that it's a organizational thing that they're not just throwing money at players and purchasing contracts and paying them, that they're investing in the product. So yes, it's money, right. But not the way you think.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So
yeah, and
I set them straight. I set them straight, man.
A third of the Hawks' frontline talent comes from guys that no other teams wanted to draft.
Mm-hmm. So there you go.
That's what they're doing. Yep.
That's what they're doing. All right. No questions this week. Anyone who has a question, hit us up at JBW Podcast on X.com with the hashtag High Heat. Send questions via email or comments to YAKYUJOHN@gmail.com, or you can go to the Facebook page and leave us a message there. Look for us on iTunes. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your postseason.
See you at the ballpark. Fukuoka this week.
This is Japan Baseball Weekly. News, interviews, analysis, and your questions all about NPB. And now your hosts, Johnny Gibson and Jim Allen.